We just heard about aluminum's carbon footprint, but making the metal has a lot of other environmental impacts. Take a small, isolated country in South America.
If you're saying it in Dutch, it's Suriname, but it's Suriname in America.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Rich Lord and some colleagues traveled to Suriname in March to learn about the history of Alcoa's aluminum business there. I talked with him recently about the series of stories, photographs, and videos they produced called The Land Alcoa Dammed. I think Suriname is not a place that a lot of people are familiar with. So why was Alcoa there?
Alcoa went to Suriname in 1916, which was not too long after a traveling Frenchman discovered bauxite in the jungles of Suriname. And bauxite is the raw material from which aluminum derives. A number of companies went to check it out, and Alcoa was the one that did the most thorough job. And from 1916 until 2016, Alcoa was a presence in the country. It eventually obtained mining concessions, built an entirely integrated aluminum industry in this little country of Suriname on the northern coast of South America. They mined the bauxite there, they refined it into what's called alumina, and then they smelted it into aluminum, all within this little country.
And now Alcoa is leaving Suriname, and they're leaving a controversy. What's at issue?
Alcoa announced in December of 2015 that it was pretty much finished in Suriname. The supplies of bauxite for which it had concessions were running out. It found that its operations there were among its least efficient operations in the world. And so they announced they were shutting everything down and pulling out. Of course, Alcoa has a lot of property there. It had its areas that were mined out and haven't yet been reforested. It has a refinery, giant lakes of red muck that came out of the aluminum process. And most of all, it has a huge dam in Suriname. The dam became the focal point of the public debate over what happens when Alcoa leaves. The dam is owned by Alcoa's subsidiary in Suriname called Suralco. So the dam is really owned by Alcoa, but it was built in the 1960s under the condition that Alcoa could own and operate the dam as long as it had an aluminum business in Suriname. When Alcoa shuts down its aluminum business, the Surinamese government says, hey, wait a minute, guys. If you don't have an aluminum industry, we want the dam. And behind the dam, there's 618 square miles of lake that had formed after the Suriname River was dammed. So one of the biggest controversies in this little country right now is what happens to that dam and what does Alcoa have to do to clean up all of these various impacts that it made on the country over 100 years.
Your series is called The Land Alcoa Dammed, meaning that physical hydroelectric dam that Alcoa built there to fuel their operations. But is there kind of a double meaning there because of how the environment changed as a result of Alcoa's actions?
Well, Alcoa undoubtedly had a lot of impacts on the country, positive and negative. And certainly Alcoa makes a compelling case that the positive impacts outweighed the negative. You had a unionized workforce of 5,000 people. A middle class was created out of this industry. You had an education system that was largely a byproduct of the need to educate people to be in the aluminum industry. You had a lot of people from this country that were able to go to college because of this industry. But you also have these very large ongoing impacts. When that dam was built and an area of about 618 square miles was flooded, they had to move 6,000 people who lived on that land. An area, you know, not that much smaller than all of Allegheny County, which had been pristine forest. That's a gigantic environmental impact right there, and one that they're still wrestling with the ramifications of now. Of course, you also have these red mud lakes of essentially refinery tailings, as they're called, chemicals and substances that come out when you turn the bauxite into alumina. So you have areas that were forest, which are now essentially red, stony, barren fields that need to be reforested. Sometimes they encircle more or less villages there in which people have traditionally relied on the forest. So while we spelled it D-A-M-M-E-D, the Land Alcoa Dammed, because of the dam, some within Suriname feel that they're still dealing with what we call the resource curse, the impacts of having a natural resources-based economy.
They're cleaning that up, part of the agreement of them leaving?
Yes, though Suriname really has no environmental law, no comprehensive environmental law at all. There are bits and pieces of environmental regulation spread through the Surinamese code, but there's no EPA in Suriname or anything like that. And there was an agreement that Alcoa would clean up to U.S. standards, as they called it, and also Pennsylvania standards because of Alcoa's presence here. The question now is, you know, what are U.S. standards, particularly in the current environment? U.S. standards appear to be a little bit in flux. So that could end up being litigated if the Surinamese government does not believe that Alcoa lives up to this pledge. The estimate of the costs of cleaning up range from $225 million up into the $300 million range. And the person assigned to negotiate this deal by the Surinamese government has said, oh, it could cost $500 million and Alcoa would still pay. Alcoa hasn't signed on to that statement, but there's a big job to do there.
Alcoa is really trying to set itself apart as a global leader in sustainability. Is there history in Suriname and how they're leaving the country at odds with that?
Well, I guess it depends on which yardstick you look at. In 2015, in one of its sustainability reports, Alcoa said that it wanted to leave net positive impacts on biodiversity in the areas in which it operates. And there's an organization called Conservation International Suriname, which is a branch of the larger Conservation International, which is global. That Conservation International Suriname said, hey guys, when you're pulling out of Suriname, how about doing that standard, the one you espoused in 2015, in which you have a net positive impact on biodiversity? When we ran that by Alcoa after our process in Suriname, they said, well, that is an aspirational goal, not a guarantee. And we never really defined what net positive impact on biodiversity is. So that sounds like a really noble goal, net positive impact. That means if you came in and you altered a landscape, the landscape after you're done is even more diverse than the one you started with. It seems like it would be challenging to do that in a place like Suriname, which is in its untouched areas, a Garden of Eden practically. And at this point, to us, Alcoa has not guaranteed that they will live up to that particular goal.
And what will happen in Suriname when Alcoa leaves, when the economy is not built around aluminum?
There's a gold economy that has kind of sprung up to supplant the aluminum economy, which has its own very dramatic effects on the landscape as they clear big patches of forest and turn them into kind of mountainous deserts of dirt and mercury and cyanide and all kinds of things. It's really kind of sad and scary to see what the gold industry, particularly the small-scale gold miners, leave behind. There's also talks of Alcoa investing roughly $50 million to do a feasibility study of opening up an area called the Bakhaus region to bauxite mining, potentially building a multi-billion dollar new refinery, but that's very tentative at this point. The government says it's got an agreement from Alcoa to do this feasibility study, but again, there's a $50 million price tag on it, and it doesn't necessarily guarantee that this aluminum industry would revive in this little country.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
No, my pleasure, Kara. Thank you.
Rich Lord is the projects reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. For the series The Land Alcoa Dammed, he shares a byline with reporter Len Boselovic. Photography was by Stephanie Strasberg, and the series was in partnership with the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. There's a link to their work at our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holzapfel.